Hey there, Mike.
Hello.
How are you?
I am good as always. You?
I'm doing great. I wanted to talk a little bit, and by a little bit I mean a lot.
A lot of bit.
Oh, just enough.
Ba-dum-bum.
About money.
Yep.
Because, so it came up recently, so I saw this really great new expense app. It's absolutely beautiful for iOS, and I linked to it on Twitter. And of course, now I'm drawing a blank.
That's fine. No, I got it. It's called Saver.
Saver, yeah. Yeah, really gorgeous looking app. But it got me thinking about this other app I like called Left to Spend. And then that got me thinking about some good advice I had received. And then that got me to thinking about my beliefs about money in general and consumerism and the whole nine yards. But so, we'll start with my beliefs on money in general. All right?
Yeah, okay. I think I could have a few things to say about this.
Yeah, okay. money is fiction.
Right. Yep.
Money is simply a construct. It is a construct that we use to trade. And what one thinks is that we're trading goods and services. But the fact is that what we're actually trading is promises and trust.
Okay.
The best example I can give is a loaf of bread. You have a loaf of bread and you're going to buy it for a dollar. Why are you going to buy it for a dollar? Because the person who's selling the loaf of bread has told you that it is worth a dollar. Has convinced you that it is worth a dollar. And you agree with that premise.
You've bought that.
Excuse
the pun.
Yes, you've bought that. Yes, you've bought that premise that loaf of bread is indeed worth a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons that you've bought that premise is because you know that just about anywhere else you go in town, a loaf of bread will cost at least $1.
Yes.
That you can't get that loaf of bread anywhere else for, say, 50 cents. So, basically, everyone has come to agreement, whether by word or by just kind of osmosis, that a loaf of bread is worth a dollar. So you take this paper dollar, or in the case of your country, a coin, and you exchange it for that loaf of bread. You take this thing, which effectively has no real value in and of itself, and you trade it for something that does, i.e. something that's physical, that you can eat and put in your belly, and will fill you up, and will provide real, actual value.
When you, I think about it, so like I work in money. That's what
yes.
I do for a living. I work in money. So you can assure I've had this thought. And I will sometimes be sitting with physical large amounts of cash. And you're looking at it and like, this means nothing. This symbolizes gold, which me and you will never touch. And I know someone who worked. So basically, this is so simplified, but every country's economy is established on the amount of gold that they hold in their Fort Knox like thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, and other assets, but
I would say every modern economy.
Yes, thank you for that correction. So I knew somebody who worked in the gold vault in my corporation, a security, and he said to me that the gold vault did not, the gold in the vault did not change the hands. So say, for example, it was held in Company X, okay? It was held in their vault. And then Company A, or country B had bought some of this gold from country C, all that would happen is that physical gold would get moved from one pile to another pile. It would never leave the facility.
Mm-hmm.
And all day, they would just be asked to put the gold from that pile onto another pile. So we'd literally would pick it up and we'd go put it down. And that is genuine. That is what happens. And when you think about it in them terms, what is this money? What is it representing? When all it is just a physical gold bar moving from one thing to another, or a tiny piece of paper or a coin moving from one person to another.
Well, let me take that even one step further, since we're talking about gold.
Yeah.
Gold is worthless. Gold is just a rock.
Yeah, it's a rock. For some reason, we've assigned, because it's rare.
It's not even necessarily rare. Seriously, it is not necessarily rare. It is artificially rare, in the same way that diamonds are artificially rare.
Yes.
You know, diamonds are rare because the diamond cartel that controls diamond, De Beers, makes them rare. Actually pumps up their rareness. Right? But they're not even those are not necessarily rare. And in fact, we could make plenty of them. We could make them. We can manufacture them now. We could manufacture perfect diamonds, indistinguishable from the real thing. These are rocks.
Yeah.
The only reason that they are valuable, and this gets back to my point, is because you and I and everyone else in the world, well, not everybody else, but a lot of other people.
Every first world nation, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, let's make that assumption. Every first world nation has, for whatever reason, decided that this rock is more valuable than, say, the pebble that you pick up on the beach. We've decided that this rock is more pretty, more precious, more whatever. But it still remains that it is a rock. It is a naturally occurring mineral here on Earth.
Yeah.
That is, you know, from that standpoint, no more precious or valuable than any other rock that is naturally occurring here on Earth. But the thing is that in order for our society to operate, we have to have physical representations of these agreements and these trust vehicles that we have set up in order to trade with each other. So that when Company A says is going to give something to Company B, Company B can trust that it's really going to get something from Company A.
Yep.
And even more so, that they can get something from Company A that they can then form similar agreements with others. In much the same way as trading that coin for that bread means that the person who sold the bread can take that coin and buy more flour, buy more, you know, that they then can trade that with, can trade that coin with trust and in a accountability system with others. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, if that's the case, why is money so important?
because Mr. Rowan, it makes the world go round.
It does. And why does it make the world go round? It makes the world go round because of trust. Because it's what allows us to have conversations about trust with and about value with other human beings.
Mm.
That without this vehicle, these conversations and these agreements would have nothing real to represent them other than a wink and a nod. But what I'm arguing is that essentially we're giving a wink and a nod. We're just calling it something else and using something physical to represent it.
I agree with you.
And I guess, you know, the larger example of this is the, you know, part of the current financial trouble we are in this country, and part of the whole, you know, housing market, the collapse and all of that other stuff that was going on that really kind of was part of the entire world economy collapsing, largely collapsed simply because people lost faith in that system. Company A said, I'll trade you X. You know, basically, Company A said to Company B, you know, hey, we're going to give you a loan, and we'd like something to back it up. And Company B said, terrific, we've got all these houses. We'll back up the loan with all these houses. And Company A said, we don't think those houses are worth what you think they're worth. And Company B said, well, what do you mean? Of course they are. Their mortgages say, you know, this one says it was worth $1 million. But we don't believe you can get $1 million for it. Guess what? Deal off, housing market collapses, yep. Banking systems collapse. I mean, all based on someone no longer believing, to use our analogy, that gold was worth what the other person thought it was worth.
Because, you know, it was the issue in that the banks were given, I mean, extending it to how, you know, how we had it here as well, the banks were giving mortgages to people that could never afford the mortgage. Right. So therefore, it destroys the resale value of the home, therefore making the mortgage loan worthless against the property value.
Correct.
Because any repossessed house does not go for its value.
Correct.
So, as you're saying, trying to use the properties as security to enforce a loan from another bank or from an international monetary fund or something like that does not work.
And the reason it doesn't is because we ascribe value largely on a basis of agreement. I think I could resell this house for the same price that I bought this house. And the moment I stop thinking that, or the moment that I find that no one else agrees with me on that, guess what? That's when its value drops. But once again, it's about agreement and trust. So all of this is just kind of to lay the premise about how I feel about money.
Mm-hmm.
I think that money itself is simply a means to an end. Right, and that the conversations that it facilitates are far more important than the money itself. The conversations and agreements that it facilitates are far more important than the money itself. And I think I've talked about this. I may have talked about this on the on a past podcast. Oh, there goes the phone again. Sorry, but. There was a year-long period where I survived raising, as a single dad, my two sons on an extremely low amount of money. Like, we were far below what would be considered the poverty level.
Yeah.
And how I managed to survive. And a big part of that was simply coming to a realization about money, about what it is, and realizing that there are some things that are important and other things that are not. Really coming to terms with what those things were. Food and shelter being the top one of those. And that once you decide what's important at that kind of level, everything else you spend money on can then be decided based upon that criteria, i.e., does this contribute to the things that are really important, i.e., do I really need this? Because a new shirt doesn't fall under the category of food or housing, and therefore you don't need it. Right? You know, once you kind of break things down to those basic levels, you can make purchase decisions very quickly because it either fits into what's really important or it does not. And if it is something you really, truly need, i.e. if the one and only shirt that you have somehow became ripped apart in the laundry, well, now that buying that new shirt suddenly becomes more important than it previously was. Right? That even value is something that is flexible and arbitrary based upon the decisions that we have sitting in front of us at the time.
So what about systems then, Pat? What is your system for tracking your funds?
Well, I have a few, depending upon what we're talking about. For my business, I primarily use BlinkSail for invoicing. PayPal kind of plays into that. I receive a lot of money through PayPal, whether it be, you know, for, you know, sponsorship payments or things like that. So I guess in a way PayPal plays into that. My wife manages all of our finances through QuickBooks, so largely so I don't have to think about that stuff. Although she really wants me to get QuickBooks and wants me to keep it and to do a better job, so she's not having to do all the work, and I really appreciate that, and I agree with her.
Pretend that it doesn't work.
It's not difficult to pretend. But for my personal finances, so I received a really good tip. My wife and I took this money class for couples, taught by this brilliant person here, Ruth Hayden, who gives these classes. And we took this before we were married, and it's a great thing to do. Money is one of the primary, you know, disagreements over money and over finances and financial hardship is one of the leading causes of divorce. And so one of the best things any couple can do for themselves before even deciding to get married is to come to terms with how they feel about money and how they plan to manage it. And at least start having those conversations now before it's too late. And so we took one of those classes, and she gave a really good tip, which I still kind of continue to use to this day, although I really wish I did it more religiously than I do, and that is, you know, figure out what your monthly budget is, what you really like, what are the important things, what you absolutely have to pay, you know, bill wise stuff like that. Then really figure out what you need on a daily basis to survive, whether it's, you know, okay, I'm going to need this much money for lunch, I'm going to need this much money for gas or for transit, I'm going to need this much money for this, that, the other thing. And then once you figure that out and you multiply it times the 30, 31 days there are in a month, take out exactly that amount in cash.
That's the old writing on the envelope technique.
It's the old envelope trick, that's right. Because my amount, that's your amount, and you know exactly how much you can spend every day without having to dip into one of the next days. And you know if you have to dip into one of the next days, that means that next day you're going to have less. And when it's all gone, it's gone. You're stuck. That's too bad. It's too late. Or maybe if you find yourself out way before the month has ended more than a few times, maybe you want to reevaluate what that number is. But the bottom line is that once you figure out what that number is, you can stick to that budget. And there's this great iPhone app that I covered on Minimal Mac a long time ago, maybe about a year ago now, but I'll link to it in the show notes, called Left to Spend. And what Left to Spend does is exactly that. You put in the amount that you have budgeted for that month, and it will break it out into each day. And then as the day goes on and you see, okay, well, I've got my $20 for the day, you punch in how much you bought for lunch and how much you know, and it will subtract that and always show you what you have left to spend for that day. And if you end up with extra at the end of the one day, it'll automatically add that extra, tack that extra on to the to the budgeted amount for the next day. So if I end up only having spent $16 today, well, tomorrow it'll show me I have $24 left to spend.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a little bit extra that day. Great. That means that maybe I could spend a little bit extra. Maybe I could treat myself to an extra iced latte, triple frop, or something like that. You know? But once again, it's about everything I try to encourage here and at Minimal Mac ideally revolves around examination and really deciding what is enough for you. And far too often, most of us go through our lives with money just spending, not really thinking about that, not really thinking, making those sorts of choices and decisions. And when you set yourself to hard and fast budgets, it's actually a hack. It forces you to think about that stuff. In a way that hopefully will make your life better.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, once again, I think this is a really interesting conversation. I think it really gets to the heart of some of the things that I've been trying to think about and write about recently about how to determine what enough is for you and the sorts of ideas and conversations and thought processes that should go into that. And more importantly, getting back to our quote-unquote news episode, what that means. Because what that means is that you'll be able to have a little bit of extra money to pay off debt, to maybe go out and enjoy yourself, have a nice weekend, have a nice vacation, do things that really are important, that really matter, allow you to spend a little bit of extra time with your family, a little bit less time working. Things like that. And I think that really, that's the question that needs to be answered. So many people want tips and tricks and strategies and everything else without asking the question of why. What's the goal? What is this going to allow me to do? Or to do better? So, hopefully, thinking about some of this stuff in this episode will help to start people asking those questions. And asking real hard, tough questions about what money really is. Mm-hmm. And what it really means. So, I think that's all for now.
Yes.
Thanks, Mike, for indulging me. I know you have... you know, as someone who works around money all day, you know, to even discuss, you know, how little your job actually matters in the grand scheme of things.
Oh, I am more than aware of that fact.
Well, it's okay. Mine too, my friend. All right. Well, take care, and we'll talk later.
Cheers.
Cheers.